Southwest expands to the Twin Cities, JetBlue finds success with eBay, and a VLJ news extravaganza with the expert on all things Eclipse, Shane Price, this week on episode 18 of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 17. This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Hello, I'm Courtney. With me, as always, is Max Flight.
Hello, Court. Hello, everybody.
And joining us this week as our guest is Shane Price. Shane is the custodian of the Eclipse Aviation Critic NG blog. Shane, thanks for joining us.
You're more than welcome, lads, and thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Max, a couple things I do want to mention before we get started. The first is the newsletter. We did send out the first newsletter last week.
Did anybody sign up?
We did. We did have about four or five people sign up. The show notes, as well as the news stories that we go over the podcast, will be included in the newsletter, as well as a lot of the news stories that we did not have time to cover. So you will not only be able to follow along on the podcast with some of the news stories that we talked about, but also see some of the news that we thought was important, but just did not have time to cover on the podcast. So it's a great way to be kept informed in the aviation industry and to kind of keep up with us here on the Airplane Geeks Podcast. So if you consider yourself an airplane geek, it's the cool thing to do. Go to airplanegeeks.com and you'll find the sign up on the right side of the page. The other thing, and we mentioned this last week, we are excited about this as well, is you will be able to hear bits and pieces of the Airplane Geeks on Flightline Internet Radio. It's an aviation-genred internet radio station that's plays a lot of aviation-type music. A lot of the podcasts from around the industry are all kind of congregated onto the internet radio show. We will be sending more this week. We only sent one excerpt last week, and we're going to send him a little bit more. So hopefully they can continue the success. I know there was a lot of buzz around it from last week. Make sure that you check it out at flightlineinternetradio.com.
Yeah, very high audio quality. This was my first real foray into internet radio listening, and I was kind of surprised at how good it sounded. It was terrific.
Yeah, it really is terrific, and it really kind of makes us sound amateur, doesn't it? Which is pretty appropriate, because we kind of are. We do have a whole lot of news this week, so what do you guys say we jump right in?
Let's go for it.
Good idea, Cart.
Okay, first up, we're going to start with the airlines this week. This from the ChicagoTribune.com, Southwest to challenge Northwest with midway flights to Minneapolis. Starting in March, Southwest Airlines plans to start flying between Chicago and Minneapolis, challenging Northwest Airlines on its home turf for the first time. That's a popular route, one of the few remaining connections between major U.S. cities where discount carriers have no offerings. This is quite an attack on Northwest, and you have to think that this has something to do with the Delta-Northwest merger. But anytime Southwest enters a new market, it's a big story because it entirely changes the dynamics of that market.
This is kind of like rubbing salt into the wound, isn't it?
Well, they're good at that. Have you seen, Southwest must be low on salt after what they've been doing to Frontier lately. But there is one interesting point in this article that I did want to mention, and that is that it's the first time in a quarter century that Southwest has offered customers just one route as it entered a market. So Minneapolis will only be served through Chicago Midway. I assume that we will see that grow, but it's a little bit different from what Southwest has done in the past.
Interesting. This starts in March, right?
This does start in March. Moving on to our next story in the airline industry, this from Southwest's competition out of JFK, that's JetBlue. Their eBay auction scores a big hit with buyers. Getting people to put awesome and airline into the same sentence these days is no easy feat, but JetBlue Airlines has managed it with its recent auction of flights and vacation packages on eBay. We were looking for something unique to get people thinking about travel, Don Uselman, manager of business development, said. We wanted a water cooler story, something that people would talk about. They decided to auction off 218 flight packages, round trips for one or two people to specific destinations on specific dates. They also had some mystery trips. We didn't close the final destination, they said, but we did provide flight days and times. So it looks like this, what's not much more than a publicity stunt, is very successful in JetBlue's eyes.
Yeah, it's certainly a creative approach to generate buzz and to get people talking. I think it was certainly successful in that regard. And the article points out that those that participated in the auction thought it was great. The feedback was just terrific. They really enjoyed it.
Moving on then to the darker side of aviation, and that's the TSA. Don't tell them I said that. This from the Wall Street Journal. TSA likely to relax restrictions on liquids in 2009. The TSA will likely relax the restrictions on carrying liquids through airport security screening checkpoints in a year, said TSA Chief Kip Hawley. I think realistically, in 1 year, we, the TSA and foreign colleagues, will be in a position to relax liquids restrictions. We are within a year of having the ability to differentiate threat liquids through the screening process. I guess it's not a huge win, but we'll take everything we can get.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is using technology to try to address the issue. I think their ability to relax this restriction relies on new X-ray machines that have capabilities that aren't out there now. So if you, spend enough money and you can deploy 600 of these things by the end of this year and 900 by the end of next year, I guess that's a pretty broad, distribution of a capability that'll let them, eliminate this restriction that no one likes.
Certainly, and I know they're under a lot of pressure to relax these, yet on the other hand, the first time something goes wrong because of a relaxed restriction, I'm sure that heads will roll because of that. So kind of between a rock and a hard place, looks like things are getting better, like you said, Max, through the use of some technology. So,
Court, it's certainly one of the things that has to be addressed here in Europe, where competition is vicious on, with other methods of transport. So airlines are losing out big time to rail and even to people, driving the distances, simply because people are fed up with the whole security, the restrictions. And I know it was much worse for you guys when the whole post 9/11 thing came in, because you were used to just walking through airports like
sure.
bus stations. We always had some level of security, but basically what's happened to us is that, being European bureaucrats, they've invented 400 ways to annoy us and just make it really, really, really painful going through an airport now. So the so-called European Union doesn't seem to exist in an airport, whereas you can just get on a train or drive your car to practically anywhere in Europe with practically no restriction. There's no security.
Yeah, and we're only really affected by that in the Northeast, where train travel is much quicker than air travel, much like it is in Europe. The big issue, I think, with this is with the airlines now charging for drinks and sometimes just not offering them at all. It makes it much more inconvenient on the passengers to not be able to bring their drinks in and not be able to get any on the airplane, which leaves this small window and very expensive window, I might add, in the terminal where they have to buy everything for, say, a 2, 3, 4, whatever it may be, hour trip. So the pressure seems to kind of be building from both sides. So hopefully they can kind of alleviate it to allow passengers to bring in more liquids, the safe ones, of course.
Yeah, but again, that's just I understand that culturally it was much more of a shock in America. Here in Europe, we're used to restrictions on flying, and it's just becoming so painful going through commercial airports now that people will, wherever possible, choose alternatives.
Yeah.
So you think the European airlines will just jump at any kind of opportunity to lessen those restrictions, huh?
Well, the European airlines, there's two models, obviously. There's the old European airline model, the traditional national carriers, and we're seeing the end of it now with Alitalia going down the tubes,
right.
Almost inevitably. But the flag carriers, as they're called, and they majored on service, and the business traveler was catered for, and aircraft were held back for one passenger who was coming in another flight, that sort of malarkey. But those flag carriers are going, and we have the phenomenon that is Ryanair, those other Southwest alike, if I can put it like this. The difference is that Michael O'Leary and Ryanair is driving cost out of the business and is doing so in every respect. So he would prefer if no liquids were sold anywhere in the airports and you could only buy it off him at a vast price on the plane.
Yeah,
so it's the opposite model, you know. He would be looking for more restrictions on what can be carried onto his aircraft so he can sell it to you.
So he can be the provider. Yeah, interesting.
That's and think about that. So there are commercial realities here. I'm quite amused to see you guys complaining about having to pay for the second bag, you know. With Ryanair and other European low-cost operators, you pay for everything, every single thing. You pay extra to join what they call the priority queue on Ryanair, okay? And all that means is you get to be one of the first 20 or 30 people to run out across the tarmac in the freezing cold and wet to try and get a seat on an aircraft. But Michael might not be the right one.
We had the model identical to Ryanair here for a short period in the U.S., and that was Skybus. And there were no complaints about the, you know, you pay for the first bag, you pay for the priority boarding. And people were happy to do that. The difference is that in the U.S., we have the legacy carriers charging for the first bag and the low-cost carriers giving to you for free.
All right, okay.
So Southwest is still, you get the first two bags for free, and you still get free drinks and free snacks and everything, where the legacy carriers are charging for everything. So there's kind of this conundrum in the U.S. with what exactly is a low-fare carrier and what exactly is a legacy carrier. And so it's all kind of confusing.
So the whole security liquids thing has to be sorted out, that's for sure, because it's just adding extra time to the whole process. But will it happen this year? Yeah, I'm sure it'll happen within 2009, probably. But there'll be some snafu, there'll be something. Something will happen, and you're right, there'll be a rollback, and suddenly the restrictions will be hammered in again, because the airlines will want to sell you liquids on the aircraft.
Yeah.
Charge you a lot of money for it.
Moving in the next story, this is from the Wired blog, which is not a place we normally go for aviation news, but this is a very interesting article. The world's greatest aviation innovations. Wired goes on to pick the top 10, what they consider the top 10 greatest innovations of aviation.
Yeah, they decided that they couldn't fit it into 10. They needed two extras.
I'll go ahead and list the 12 of them. Number one is cabin pressurization. Two is black box. Three is the Concorde radar. The jumbo jet. Mm. The hub and spoke system. Interestingly enough, the very light jet.
Number seven.
Yeah, number seven. Number eight is winglets. The flying wing at number 9, and number 10, stealth aircraft, the jetway at 11, and de-icing at number 12. I agree with about half of them. What do you think, Max?
Yeah. Some of these are great top 10 contenders. Some of them kind of seem a stretch.
Certainly radar, the jumbo jet, the Concorde black box, cabin pressurization, and those. And the one I specifically want to talk about is the very light jet, which the success or failure of that airplane is largely still in the air.
Agreed. I don't think there's any doubt that everybody would like, especially in North America, where, you know, there's I've seen various numbers, but there's, you know, a couple of 100,000 people who theoretically have pilot's license and would want or might benefit from a jet as opposed to a prop, or faster or higher or whatever the attraction you pick out of the very light jet model. But I'm just completely confused as to why it has to be a jet. You know, there's many aircraft out there that compete with the performance package that the current half dozen or so VLJ, either existing or soon to come to market aircraft, offer in terms of the range, the payload,
right,
you know, all of that stuff. Is it that innovative when if you want to go from A to B and you want to do it in X time, there's plenty of other existing prop aircraft that do it, and the VLJ doesn't really bring anything to the party.
It's just plain cooler.
ramp appeal.
Yeah, that's it.
But then, you know, you have to have this higher, this very demanding type rating and maintain it. You know, you're trying as a pilot to get certain things done, and some of these jets are more sophisticated beasties and require higher degrees of airmanship, training, recurrent training. Your insurance company's going to look at you like you had four heads in the first instance. All of that stuff. Plus, okay, they cost more money, but do they actually do any better? Do they actually perform what the person who has it wants to do, go from A to B? But the Eclipse, right, the Eclipse E500, which I'll by mistake refer to as the FPJ, because that's what we call it on the blog, the Fisher-Price jet. it'll just slip in and out of conversation. It's only 4'2" high. 4'2". You know, you're practically on your hands and knees crawling around inside the damn thing, apparently. Certainly question why it's one of the world's greatest aviation innovations. That's for sure. It doesn't seem to belong on that list.
It may turn out to be, but it seems a little premature right now, huh?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the real true benefit to a jet over a turboprop only comes to light when you start pushing the range. You know, with the looks of Dayjet and Pogo, you know, they are looking at short hop, you know, high frequency operations, in which case an MU-2, a Mitsubishi turboprop would be a much better aircraft to do that. It's about the same size, a little bit larger, or even a King Air.
To correct your court on one small thing, Dayjet aren't doing it anymore. They were.
You're right. That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Just a small correction.
And a fair one at that. I'll tell you, we'll move into the next article. This from AIN Online seems to be one of our favorites to find some of these good news articles. Eclipse Aviation meets Congress. The Democratic majority of the subcommittee said the investigation, this is the congressional investigation about the certification of the Eclipse, was the result of allegations that the FAA rushed to approve the type and production certificates despite the fact that a number of FAA certification engineers and aviation safety inspectors raised safety concerns about the design and manufacturing of the aircraft. The article goes on to say that the Republican staff wholeheartedly rejected the notion and embraced the methods as a means of allowing innovation in the aircraft industry within acceptable levels of risk with a safety system that requires multiple redundancies. So it seems like there's a little partisan politics going on here. You've got one side very staunch, say, no, we shouldn't relax any of the regulations regardless of the aircraft type. The other side saying, oh, it's thinking outside the envelope.
Yeah, I'm first of all, I agree about AIN. They do a lot of work and maybe don't get all the credit that they should do for it, but they've done particularly good work in the last few weeks on this and written a number of really searching articles, really, really asking the hard questions. So this is one of a string that they've done. I'm sure that because of it's election time, lads, you know, everything is going to be maneuvered around Congress as a why don't we do it this way? Well, we won't do it this way because you guys want to do it this way. We'll want to do it some other way. That's just the way politicians operate. But there's another good article in the same website by Matt Thurber, which is Congressional Scrutiny Proves Newest Travail for Battered Eclipse. Also on the 1st of October. Those guys have looked at this from a number of different angles, and from my perspective, just trying to keep some balance here, there's a lot going on underneath the radar here with that whole investigation. You had the original FAA unusually calling the safety certification review, checking the original certification internally themselves, and they did a 30-day thing on that as soon as they knew that the Congress were going to go ahead and hold the hearings. The hearings themselves took place in a very straightforward manner, but clearly from reading the material that flowed out of it, there was a lot more going on in the background when the investigators were looking and talking to people. And I know they were talking to a number of people who've both been on the blog and contacted me via the email and on telephone, that this thing will rumble on, and it won't just be political. It'll keep coming back until the method by which Eclipse got its original type certificate and production certificate is deeply and properly reviewed.
And we want a consistent set of procedures, right, going forward, so that others who are, looking to certify aircraft in the future, know what to expect, and there's a consistency of approach.
I agree.
Keeping with the Eclipse topic throughout the rest of the episode, the next article comes from the New York Times. We actually mentioned this last week, and we did want to bring it up again with Shane this week, and that is that Eclipse will make its small jets in Russia. Eclipse Aviation, a maker of small twin-engine jets that has been struggling with high costs and tight credit, said Tuesday it would begin manufacturing in Russia. The company based in Albuquerque said it would receive $205 million in financing from the Russian state bank, the VNB. Another interesting point, the bank's supervisory board is headed by the Russian Prime Minister, Vladimir Putin.
I hear he's a very nice man. I just don't understand why he's interested in this one. First of all, the article itself is technically incorrect. The announcement from Russia was that this VNB bank would provide funding for the construction of the factory that would build the aircraft. They weren't providing Eclipse Aviation with $205 million. They were providing an entity which will be charged with owning the infrastructure, and they will do that when Eclipse can show the capacity, specifically the financial capacity, to the factory.
That's an important distinction.
Well, really, I suppose the underlying thing here is if you've been attempting to achieve high rates, as they call it, high rate production in Albuquerque and New Mexico, and you were going to build 2, 3, 4 aircraft a day, weren't you? Because the market was for 2,700 orders, wasn't it? And you never got anywhere near one a day. You got to about 0.75 a day for a short burst in the middle of in the early summer this year. And then you've had to cut your production dramatically because the order book isn't what you claim it is. And now you need a second factory because they are going to keep Albuquerque open. That's official Eclipse Aviation policy. So you're now going to have two factories making aircraft to satisfy demand from where? Who's going to buy all these jets? That's a really hard question. And there isn't a satisfactory answer to it that any of us can hang our hat on. Never mind where are you going to build them? Why are you going to build them?
The article does go on to say, from Roel Piper, who is the new CEO, it is an aircraft absolutely made for Europe, which I'm not necessarily disputing, although here's my problem with it. It seems like they may be looking at this Russian plant in hopes of the European market maturing, which it has not yet. So are they kind of putting their money out in desperation of a market maturing that has not yet? I'm a little concerned about what seems to be the aggressiveness of this deal. And like you said, Shane, I agree completely. If they're down to 1 to 2 a week production at the Albuquerque facility and they're not going to shut that down, what are they doing in Russia?
Well, I'm pretty clear about what, I think is going on here. But what I can tell you from a European perspective is that there is no market in Europe for, as there would be in the United States. In the United States, you're blessed with, a huge number of private airfields, small airfields and municipal small airfields all over the place. I've traveled extensively on the East Coast and in the Central States, and you see them everywhere. There's airfields,
sure, yeah,
and small city airports everywhere, right? You don't have them in Europe. They're not here. And the reason is very simple. The density of population is so high. People, don't want an airfield in their backyard. And, airfields are just not popular, especially when logically go to your nearest train station, which is very close by, and you travel at very high speed on modern electric-powered trains that do 300 kilometers per hour, and you go from city center to city center in a couple of hours. Let's say you don't want to go, you don't like trains, okay? Well, then you get in your high-speed car and you drive on, in Germany, for instance, on unrestricted autobahns and literally unrestricted, you're driving at 100. I was driving in Germany a couple of weeks ago. I was doing 140 miles an hour, and I was struggling to keep up with the traffic at 140 miles an hour. I just couldn't keep up. So, you know, why is Europe the target market for this jet? People like me, what I was looking for a jet to do was to cross the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Not to fly around in Europe. Yeah. No, the real issue here in Europe for the very light jet is very simple. The alternatives are attractive.
Did want to move into the last story. Again, Eclipse Base. This from Aviation Week. Market and aircraft issues sealed Dayjet fate. A turbulent capital market and ongoing problems with the Eclipse EA-500 very light jet ultimately undid Dayjet's plans for establishing a vast network of per-seat, on-demand air taxi services, said company executives. He has maintained over the past year that the company was able to attract the market that it had expected. Dayjet claimed a base of more than 2,400 members and had flown more than 9,000 segments, totaling more than 100 miles since launch. It's unfortunate that these developments have come at the same time our nation has fallen into the most serious capital crisis of our lifetime, Yakubuchi said. Regrettably, without access to growth capital, we have no choice but to discontinue operations. Before I comment, Shane, I wanted to get your thoughts.
As I outlined to you before we started the interview process here, I've kind of been watching this for 18 months, more or less, and this was before, obviously, Dayjet had received their first aircraft. There's a real difficulty with the model that they were trying to develop in terms of the per-seat on-demand. In other words, the idea being that you would potentially end up sharing an aircraft with somebody who, if the computers decided it was the right thing, would get dropped off before you, but you'd still get to where you were going and come back. The challenge seemed to be getting enough people to agree to do that, to share the aircraft, and for the network, which it would require to be big enough to justify the number of aircraft that Dayjet put into play. How do you make money by buying lots and lots of small aircraft, jets specifically, training lots and lots of pilots, distribute them all over the South, or any region of the States, but specifically Florida, and then get people to get out of their cars or not use a cheaper service from somebody like SatAir who run Cirrus's and do the same type of 200 to 300 mile runs, but for far less money. So none of us could work out how Dayjet could make money using that model. Now, maybe there is a model for air taxi as a rank in a major hub, flying out of the major hub. But you've already seen the whole mess up in the New York metropolitan area with all the airports there talking about auctioning off slots because it's runway space is so short, time is so under so much pressure. So even if you sort of thought about taxis just moving to the other side of security and you walked off a big plane and got on a small plane and flew away, even that doesn't seem to work, doesn't seem to have a place. Dayjet's original idea was an intriguing one, but were they able to make it work commercially? I don't think it was commercially viable, and I think the convenience of having, a market crash and a severe economic downturn as the excuse to pull it, fine.
Now, and my question would be, they claim 2,400 members, but what exactly is a member? Is it somebody who says, okay, I'll fly with you someday?
The idea behind the membership was that you had to register and pay a fee on the website, okay, before you could book a flight. Mm. And originally that was going to be, if memory serves, I think $275, something like that, later reduced to $99. So you paid money up front into Dayjet. However, being a member didn't necessarily mean that you got any privileges. You just got to book flights. So people rapidly realized that if they weren't going to fit the business model that Dayjet were proposing, there wasn't really much point. Sure, they had 2,400 members, but I'd say a lot of them were lapsed, people who tried it for a laugh, and then, no, it didn't work out.
I agree, and I think that's kind of what I was getting at, the 2,400 members. How many of those actually flew, and how often? The 9,000 segments, which isn't necessarily a good measure of how successful your company is. I want to know how many people were on those 9,000 segments. And just like you said, Shane, you know, you're dealing with a premium product here, so they're really going after the first class passenger, and they are willing to pay more. They're going to have to, in just with the business model designed the way it is. And then you're going to tell that person, by the way, we need to make a stop and drop this guy off next to you.
Yeah.
And, oh, and by the way, you know, to the business managers, once we drop this guy off in, say, Birmingham, we're really counting on somebody being there at that exact moment, willing to pay that exact premium price to fly the airplane back. Otherwise, you have a charter operator. I mean, that's one of the major price detriments, is that effectively, if you're flying one way, you have to pay for the round trip of the aircraft. Dayjet's initial business plan said that we are going to prevent deadheading from, you know, using the day ports, having so many of these so-called members willing to fly and be waiting there. But, you know, one of two things happens when you make those people wait. Either the amount that they're willing to pay is less, or the benefit of them just jumping on a first-class jet or chartering their own aircraft becomes greater to them. So
also, ironically, I mean, one of the things they set out when they set out, well, they said they were only going to be a Monday to Friday business. And then a few weeks before the shutters came down, they started flying weekends, because clearly there's a leisure market for flight, you know, for the sort of service they're offering. Obviously, it's the dawn of aviation. People were using it for fun. We're using aircraft for fun. So, you know, they didn't even fly 7 days a week. They only flew 5 days a week. And ironically, at the end, you know, contacts within the business that were in communication, and some of them still in communication with me, they were actually getting busy. They were actually beginning to make sense of it, but only after they'd restructured the business, grounded half the fleet, and let, you know, two-thirds of the staff go. You know, they did everything they could to try and stay afloat, but the fundamentals of the business weren't right from the outset. It wasn't the right aircraft, for sure. And it's certainly this model of pick up and go, you know, and then drop somebody off, and then book your flight the night before, but not be certain when you're going to take off or land, and only be told at the last minute, and all of that good stuff, all of the stuff that the computers were going to optimize for the company. Nah, it just became a barrier to doing business, I suppose.
And again, we are talking with Shane Price. He's the custodian of the Eclipse Aviation Critic NG blog. And Shane, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more about the blog and kind of some of the issues you've been through with it.
Oh, that's been fun. Well, I took over in February. When I say took over, it's technically a different site to the original Eclipse Aviation Critic blog site set up by Stan Blankenship. And to be fair, if you go back to his very original post in 2006 and look at it, and you can just—it's like Nostradamus, you know. he's more or less he in his very first post, he hit all of the key issues with Eclipse Aviation as a company, and that's really my interest in it, is their business methods and practices. But since February, 48 headline posts, nearly 10,000 comments. You know, I've lost track of the number of emails that I get. I don't even try to count that. You know, some very interesting times, initially quiet and then building up a little bit. And then I think the major tactical error, which is what effectively did the biggest favor to the blog, was I was actually out having a nice Chinese meal here in the town where I live in Ireland, and I got an email in on BlackBerry, and it read, "Hello, Google has received a civil subpoena that demands information regarding the source of anonymous comments posted on your blog, eclipsecriticng.blogspot.com. The case, entitled Eclipse Aviation Corporation v. John Doe, Jane Doe et al., has been filed in the Superior Court of California, County of Santa Clara, case number da-da-da-da-da. So
that probably wrecked dinner.
Rayburn decided to sue to find out who was on the blog. Well, it all kicked off from there. And life got very interesting. That was in April. Of course, subsequently, we've broken a number of individual stories. We've had, you know, various changes inside the company itself, the restructuring of Dayjet, the effective shutdown of Dayjet, Vern Rayburn's departure from Lucas Aviation, all predicted fairly accurately on the blog. Vern left, as you know, in rather unusual circumstances on the opening morning of Oshkosh, Monday the 10th.
Yes, that was pretty unique.
I don't know if I would have been let into the tent, but if I had been let in, I would have really enjoyed. But simply because I believe that the decision to sue bloggers had to be, you know, had to hold them up to ridicule, because it was really a silly thing to do. It just didn't make sense. You know, we've had information on the blog from suppliers, from staff, from customers. One of the recent postings in September was from a satisfied customer. I'm happy to post anything up. There's a chap called Ken Meyer, and I gave him a post so he could tell people what a wonderful aircraft it was.
I say he really loves his jet.
He's really keen on it, and good luck to him. I'm happy for him. He seems to be in a very small club of people who like that jet. So all of these things over the extended period that it now seems since the 16th of February have been very educational for me. I've learned a lot, and I think what the blog has done is it's tried to keep a focus on the topic. We don't wander around the place. The topic stays straightforward. I try to mix it up in terms of the posts they get. We had a nice one from one of our long-term bloggers, known as Black Tulip. It's a spoof on the Russian plant, and went out on the 28th of September. So we have parody, and some would say comedy, and we have genuine discussion, and we have, it always rolls forward. There's always something new, which is what blogs are about.
Well, I noticed that for, you know, any one blog post, you tend to get, hundreds of comments. I can't recall another blog that I see that kind of activity from commenters. Who are all these people? Are they employees? Are they potential customers? Who are all the people?
It's a real intriguing mix. A significant number of them are aviation professionals, guys who are engaged with the business. There's specialist part manufacturers, there's consultants, there are charter operator types, those sort of people. There are owners, obviously, people who have the aircraft.
Right.
There are, although they're not supposed to be there, there are staff, either directly or indirectly feeding stuff through me. And there are actual Eclipse Aviation suppliers. In fact, at one point I was getting so much emails from the staff at EAC that I made a public appeal to Peg to provide me with an email address inside the company, because she was losing productivity when people were going out to the local McDonald's to log on and send me an email. I said it would be more productive if they could just email me directly.
I bet she loves that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure she did. I was, of course, joking. But the point is that the people who contribute are from a wide variety across the whole spectrum. There's no single group. And over time, you'll see rises and falls in the various participants' activity. You'll see different groups coming, people noticing it for the first time. And you'll also see that pretty much one or two of the original bloggers from Stan still knocking around, And yeah, no, it's what a blog should be. I think it's open.
Yeah, it's a real passionate group.
Yeah, and some of these guys genuinely know what they're talking about, unlike me. They really do. They really do understand a subject. There are some people on this blog who are very, very technically and competent, are really well organized in business, and understand the issues deeply, much more deeply than I attempt to.
Now, Shane, I don't know how familiar you are with our interview process, but one thing that Max and I make sure to do, and that's torture the guests as much as we can with something we call word associations. Are you familiar?
I'm not looking forward to this bit because there are going to be cultural misunderstandings.
Oh, that's fine. That's even better.
So, yeah, go ahead. We'll get a lash.
All right, we start out early. Start out easy with just simply airlines.
Well, you see, there you go. You know, Ryanair, Aer Lingus, British Airways, Alitalia, KLM, Lufthansa. You know, what am I going to say about JetBlue? I don't know who JetBlue are. I've never flown with them. You know, my experience of North American aviation is Delta and American Airlines and whatever they're called. You know, so sorry about that.
No, that's fair. And really, that's one of the things we wanted to do, and one of the reasons we were excited to bring you to the show, Shane, and that was to give us more of a perspective on what's happening in Europe, which we very much appreciate, which leads perfectly into my word, European aviation.
Well, stressed, that's the best way to put it. Undergoing, I would have said, the last period of change from the flag carriers, the national carriers, Alitalia staggering towards bankruptcy, inevitably almost, and the so-called low-cost carriers. So, you know, again, the Ryanairs of this world changing the way people going to out-of-the-way airports, hundreds of kilometers sometimes from where they say they go to. We always joke about the Brussels South airport that Ryanair use. They call it Brussels South. They should really call it Paris North. It's so far from Brussels. But anyway, you know, that those European aviation is challenged right now, just as your own aviation industry is challenged for the same reasons.
Okay, next I have air taxi.
Nice idea, but I'm not sure that it's going to work the way the guys promoting it think it's going to work, for the reasons we've discussed. It's a great phrase, great marketing phrase. It conjures up the idea that there'll be an aircraft at your beck and call within relatively short period of time, but a couple of things are missing from the taxi transposition to air taxi. You know, you don't have streets where taxis can be hailed in the middle, in the middle of nowhere, when you're trying to pick up a jet or even a prop. So, yeah, air taxi, jury's out.
Okay, my next one, this may be a little difficult, but I'm hoping you can come up with something to speak on this one, Eclipse.
That's when the moon gets in front of the sun and you get a you meant something. Yeah, okay. Well, lads, I don't like to call it because I don't know. You know, I'm not running the company, but I think they are in really serious difficulties at this time, and those difficulties would appear to me to be practically insurmountable. I'm just checking CNN, and you'll be aware, or may or may not be aware, that last Monday, our government here in Ireland felt it necessary to stand directly behind our commercial banks as the ultimate guarantor. So, of those bank debts, in an effort to keep liquidity going. The Germans, as we speak, are struggling to keep one of their major mortgage holders and mortgage providers open. It's the credit crisis that's hitting the banking world will filter out through into the commercial arena, and I think the money that Eclipse Aviation requires to keep going just won't be found, just won't be able to get it. And the inevitable consequences are that the company closes and leaves behind, you know, somebody's trying to keep track of this, but leaves behind up to 6 different variants of the one model, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. I wish they could continue. You know, I wish every startup success. Business is hard. I just can't see these guys lasting the course, sadly.
Okay, I have one more. I made my list up before we started recording the show, and now at this point I'm a little bit nervous. So if you want to decline on this one, or it at the very least, don't say anything that's going to get us into a whole lot of trouble, or yourself included. But so my last one here is Vern Rayburn.
Yeah, he's a really interesting character. I have to say, anybody who's prepared to spend 10 years of their life, as he did, chasing his model, his idea of what an aircraft, a small jet aircraft, could be, he, you know, has to have tremendous focus and reserves, and I'm sure he's a fundamentally, you know, useful individual. I'm sure he has, in his career, appears to have done many things in business that were successful, and indeed, you know, Eclipse may turn out to be successful. We, you know, I don't have the crystal ball. I can't predict the future. But some of what he did in Eclipse, and the way in which he treated his suppliers, his staff, his customers, and just the aviation manufacturing market, you know, referring to other manufacturers as dinosaurs. I mean, some of that stuff is just silly and wasn't going to make him friends, wasn't going to make it easier to sell more aircraft. He was speaking for the sake of saying something controversial without actually advancing his cause, or at least not subsequently had be seen to have advanced his cause. I'm sure he'd like to meet me and I'd like to meet him over a pint and have a chat. I'm just not certain that I'd go into business with him. Do you know what I mean?
Shane, your level of restraint is exemplary.
Well, to be fair, lads, he's never done me any personal harm, you know?
Well, if the two of you agree to have a pint sometime, give me a call, let me know, I'll be right over, and I'm buying, because I'd like to see it.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, the last word then, Shane, and this one should be no surprise, that's airplane geeks.
Well, now, I am really challenged here, because I admire what you do, and I admire the fact that you're using the technology in an innovative way. You know, I spend so much time just trying to collate stuff, so much of my spare time trying to collate stuff for the Eclipse blog, that I really honestly don't get to see an awful lot more. I'm remiss in not being one of your subscribers, for instance, and it's something that I will do now that we've finished this conversation. But really, I can't say that I've had a high degree of impact or interaction with your with you until this interview.
And we really do appreciate you coming, providing your insight into the very light jet.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me, Courtney, and thank you for having me, Max. And you guys now go and do some proper editing and cut out half the stuff that I said.
No.
Great.
Go on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks again to Shane Price for the interview. You can check out his blog at eclipsecriticng.blogspot.com. But now, Max has his pick of the week.
Yes, Court, my pick this week is Skylens Aviation. This is a site that reports on airshow events and some other things, but unlike some other sites, it's not just a photo gallery of airshow pictures, and it's not just a straight news report, but instead it's kind of a, I would say, an artful combination of text and truly outstanding photographs by a French aviation media writer, and he's also a digital aviation photographer. And he'll perhaps excuse me in advance for my poor pronunciation, but I would say François Bravo. I hope that's close. At this site, there's lots of good aerial shots, but he's also got a number of interesting sort of what you would call environmental images at ground level that kind of captures the activities of these events that he covers. He does post directly from the events, kind of real-time or near real-time. And I really invite you to take a look at this site. One of the ones I really liked was the Midnight Sun Air Show in Finland. And the photographs are extremely dramatic because you see, you know, fighter jet afterburners in low-light conditions. Really spectacular. And I also like the Jersey International Air Display. You know, that really kind of took my breath away, some of the warbirds that he's got photographs up there. Particularly the B-17 shots were just kind of awesome. So this is, you know, all done by a professional, and he requests that you don't steal his copyrighted photographs, so it's not a site really to go get photographs to use for other purposes. But he does have a small gallery where you can download some of the images for your own use. So I think it's worth a look. I wish my aviation photography was half as good as his, enjoy it.
Again, that's SkyLens, SkyLens.com, and you can view all the great photography there. Also wanted to mention a follow-up from last week's Pick of the Week. This is from Michael Forte. He sent us an email. He is the creator of Airport Guide. He said, thanks for the Pick of the Week, and also wanted to mention that within a week or so, he does plan to have all international airports added to the site as well. So that's airportguide.com, which was last week's Pick of the Week. And we also remind you that the links to the Pick of the Week will be included on our newsletter that I would like to plug once more. You can sign up for that by going to airplanegeeks.com. On the right side, you can put in your email address and subscribe to our newsletter. It will go out weekly with the show notes, including the Pick of the Week, and any other news that we were not able to cover. Also, again, want to mention Flightline Internet Radio. We appreciate the work they're doing over there and have been listening to it a lot. You can visit them at Flightline Internet Radio, and they will have a lot of aviation music and different podcasts from Civil Air Patrol. I believe Jetwine is on there as well, and he does a nice bit, as well as Indy Transponder, all people that we've had on the aviation meetup about a month ago. Or 2 months ago now. Wow, time flies.
2 months ago now. Yeah, and you can really use that just like a radio station. You know, if you're doing something else, you can turn it on, let it kind of play in the background. You don't have to treat it as sort of a focused activity like, for example, you're doing right now, I'm sure, listening to our podcast.
don't forget all the ways that you can contact us. If you have something that you would like said on the podcast, you can email us, thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. You can also leave us a voicemail message. That's 812-757-4252. Go ahead and just leave a message, and we'll get it on the podcast. The best way is to probably submit an MP3 and email it to us directly at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Don't forget, airplanegeeks.com is our website. Go there where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, where we do have more than what's in the podcast. So make sure you don't miss out on that. And as always, we like to ask that you just share us with your friends. That really is the best way. And we are interested in organic community here with the aviation community. So that is the best way that we would appreciate your support.
Plus we're cheap.
Yeah, and we're cheap. I think as Flightline Internet Radio does have a bit that comes on and says, guaranteed satisfaction or double your money back.
Excellent.
Other than that, Max, we do have some things we're looking forward to over the next couple podcasts, some more interviews. Of course, the news will continue to trickle in. But as for episode 17, I think that's it, Max.
I think so. I'm already thinking about number 18.
I think I am too. So for all of you joining us, we appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week on episode 18 of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. We'll see you.
Bye, everybody. Hot as hell. You
Vineshikanambank.
See, I wouldn't try to pronounce that last week. You tried this week.
It's known as a VNB, by the way.